Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
There's a lot of pressure to wear the right clothes for every situation, but the clothes don't make the man. With Mack Weldon, you can build a wardrobe that looks polished in any setting and tells the world you stay you wherever you go. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 25% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MACKWELDON.com. Promo code MACK25.
Hey, everyone. Welcome into Redacted on this Wednesday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris. Welcome back.
Thank you so much. And on this show, we don't suffer fools. And, you know, it's all a lie out there. So we're trying to navigate and try to find the truth. And that's all we try to do here on this show is try to find the truth, because you're all being fed a gallon of lies right now by your government, by your media. So welcome into the show. We've got a busy show for you on this Wednesday. NATO releasing their invasion plans. Like, this is an idea. Hey, let's have these printed up in the Telegraph in the UK. Here's what we plan to do to drive 300,000 forces to go right up to Russia's border so that we can start World War III. Of course, these plans have been on the books for many, many years. But now we are itching for World War III, and we're going to dive into that tonight on the show.
Plus, after years of ignoring excess deaths, now the media is finally admitting, yeah, there's excess deaths. What do we think it is, we wonder? Well, we have a doctor coming up to help us, which is so interesting. After ignoring these and lacking curiosity completely, how the media is now saying, oh, there's kind of something to that. So we're going to look at those numbers.
We're also going to talk about those PCR tests, you know, those swabs they shoved up your nose. And, well, there were some brave people out there saying these things don't do crap. Well, we had to shut down an entire population because of these PCR tests. Well, now a court has ruled on these PCR tests, and we're going to dive deep into what that actually means and what they knew ahead of time but forced entire populations to go.
I mean, this is wild. We have a court ruling now that these were an unreliable way to restrict social freedoms. And yet that's exactly what they did, not to mention the fact that they were unreliable. So were our case numbers then. It's wild to look at this, and I'm mad as snakes about it.
I got canceled by so many friends for saying that all during this.
Oh, of course.
Like, oh, you can go ahead and go get one of those if you want.
Yeah, you can't put that. You couldn't put that on social media. Facebook would have banned you. Mm-hmm. I mean, you couldn't talk about it at all.
Yeah.
Something else you're not allowed to really talk about is the World Economic Forum. They really don't want you to, and you'll be in trouble if you do. Tucker Carlson just took on Klaus Schwab, and actually got to meet Klaus Schwab. We're going to talk about his interaction with him and his thoughts about this sort of a Dr. Evil character. We're going to talk about that, all of that and more on tonight's show. So welcome in. Let us know where you're joining us from. And we didn't plan this at all. We just noticed that every one of us is wearing green today, which is kind of a random choice of a color.
Yes, it is. Yeah. So
I usually wear black.
Are you at home wearing green? Let us know how many of you also sort of got that telepathic memo.
It's Wednesday.
Put on green.
Yeah,
it's
Wednesday. I didn't get the memo because I'm wearing black. I'm just wearing all black.
Hmm. Okay.
The man in black.
Well, you're ruining it for us, but the rest of us, yeah, maybe that's the color of great change and enlightenment. Let's go with that.
Yeah. So, hey, everyone. Nice to see all of you guys. If you guys subscribe to the big channel, your name will pop up here on the big board during the show and up on the screen as well. So thanks so much for joining us tonight. We want to talk about a lot of things tonight on the show, but, you know, we have a newsletter. We should tell you about our newsletter. We have a daily newsletter that you can subscribe to by going to redacted.inc. Click on that right there. Put in your email address. Hit submit. And then you will receive a welcome email. You just need to confirm that you want to receive our great newsletter. We publish it Monday through Thursday, first thing in the morning. Natalie and I work on it together. We write it. And so it's a labor of love between the two of us. And we'd love to have... You can have our love child in your inbox.
Love Child. That sounds gross.
You can have our newsletter Love Child in your inbox.
We're going to call it a labor of love. It's
okay,
not
labor
a love,
of love
child.
All right, Love Child. But it's the best newsletter in the world. You should all go grab it. And we cover stories you're not going to see in the mainstream media. But you do need to confirm it. Like once you go to redacted.inc and you put in your email address, you hit submit, you will receive that. It might show up in your spam folder. Google has labeled us as dangerous in their Gmail algorithm. So it might, again, wind up in junk folder spam. You just need to slide it over to your inbox so you receive it first thing tomorrow morning. So that, again, that's redacted.inc. Well, one day before the 80th anniversary of D-Day, Germans are being told, get ready for war, clear out your basements as a place to seek shelter, as World War III seems inevitable. This according to Der Spiegel this morning, the German newspaper. Cellar instead of bunker, where the Germans should seek shelter in case of war. And for good reason, right now, we are slow marching towards nuclear war, and Europe is about to become the largest staging ground for NATO forces to attack Russia. So over the past 24 hours, we learned in the Telegraph in the UK that, quote, NATO is developing multiple land corridors to rush U.S. troops and armor to the front lines in the event of a major European ground war with Russia. Here you can see these land corridors here on your map here on the screen. Over 300,000 U.S. troops deployed up through Norway, through the Netherlands, through Italy, through Greece, and Turkey. So what exactly is happening, this inevitable escalation? Let's ask Alexander Mercuris from the Duran, who is kind enough to give us some time today to talk about these latest developments. Alexander, I am sick as a sin, so I'm going to let you do all of the talking if I can. What do you make of this this Telegraph piece and this sort of telegraphing of NATO's plans?
Well, what is happening is that the Russians are winning in Ukraine. This is what is behind all of the hysteria, the panic, the plans, the schemes, the provocations, the idea of allowing Ukraine to launch missiles and carry out shelling attacks inside Russian territory, the creation of the land corridors, all of those things. It is because the Russians now are conclusively winning the war in Ukraine. The Western powers, the United States, and even more so the European powers, which are extremely overinvested and very exposed in this conflict, have made a massive investment in Ukraine, not just over the last 3 years, the years of the war, but going back many, many years before that. And I mean, they had this huge plan, this idea that, you know, they would be able to push Russia back, they would be able to push it eastwards. Some of them even had hopes that Russia might break up or something of that kind if Ukraine were brought into NATO, into the European family, as it was called. What they have found instead is that what their actions have done is that they have provoked Russia and conjured up this massive Russian war machine that is now clanking in their direction. And this is creating panic and hysteria across Europe and among some people in Washington, who suddenly discovered that they're not as powerful as they thought they were, and that the Russians aren't as weak as that they thought they were. And so they're coming up with these equally dangerous and reckless proposals to rush troops to the border, to prepare for nuclear war, to get people to hide in cellars and to do all of these things without, of course, ever admitting the truth that the only reason we are in this crisis at all, that we have found ourselves in this position, is because our foreign policy, our relations with Russia have been mismanaged to an astonishing degree for the last 30 years. Ever since the end of the Cold War, it has been the greatest failure of Western policy since the Versailles Treaty of 1919.
You mentioned money, this massive investment. Is that what it comes down to? This massive investment of land and mineral resources and rebuilding? We heard Zelensky say he wants to turn Ukraine into the next Israel. Is that what this is all about, that they see this now slipping away, slipping through their hands, and you have all of these billion-dollar investment firms that have poured money and resources into this, and they're seeing it slipping away now?
is three quarters that. It is indeed. I mean, there is this massive investment and it is slipping away. But there is something else, and it's not to be underestimated. And you mentioned the Daily Telegraph. There's an article in the Daily Telegraph about this as well, which is that along with the investment of money and resources and intelligence assets and weapon systems and plans and schemes and all of that, there is a fear of a massive loss of credibility, that a defeat for the West in Ukraine, or for the United States, but also for Western Europe, for the Western European powers, for the European Union, NATO, all of that, will show that the emperor is not without clothes, but that the emperor doesn't have as many clothes as he believed he did. And that is what they're afraid of, that in a time when, again, they have sought adversarial relationships with all sorts of powerful countries around the world, China, Iran, even to some extent friends or purported friends like Brazil, Turkey, that suddenly the West will not look as powerful, as overwhelmingly strong as it has looked up to this point. And that is something that is frightening them and driving them mad. One should not overlook the financial and material aspects of the overinvestment as well. An awful lot of people are going to be very, very badly burnt. And of course, an awful lot of people make an awful lot of money out of Ukraine, and money always talks. But the psychological aspect of the effect of a Western defeat in Ukraine should not be underestimated either.
When you look at this land corridors, and I understand from my research anyway, that the idea of having large sort of staging bases like in Iraq or Afghanistan, as the Telegraph points out, that those are anachronistic, right? These large bases would be destroyed by Russia sort of immediately. So you can't have these large staging bases anymore. Can you describe to our audience what a land corridor would look like when we talk about hundreds of thousands of troops going up through Norway, going through the Netherlands, going through Italy, Greece, and Turkey? We just see a constant, steady stream of troops and material. Is that what a land corridor would look like?
No, I think what it would mean is that these are routes through which troops could move without encountering the usual kind of bureaucratic and administrative obstacles which exist in Europe, because, of course, it's important to remember that Europe, unlike the United States, is not a single country. It's not a single political unit. It is still, to a very great extent, subdivided into many small states, which, to a greater or lesser degree, prize their independence. So the idea is negotiate now, create these corridors, allowing these troops to move along these particular designated lines, and they'll be able to move fast, and that the borders through which they move, in effect, will not exist. Now, I have to say, this is not a new plan or a new proposal. It's been floated. The first time I heard about it, I think it was about 20 years ago, which is, you know, long before we had a crisis now. But it's been discussed. It's never really been acted upon. Suddenly, there is this panic now to accelerate it and to bring it all together and to make it work, because suddenly the threat from the East is supposed to be looming.
Will Russia sit back? I mean, we saw NATO members okaying the use of jets to strike in Russia. We saw HIMARS attacks over the past 48 hours into Russia, 20, 30 miles inside of Russia, hitting civilian infrastructure, once again hitting civilian buses and other civilian infrastructure. We keep hearing Russia say, we are going, you know, Poland and these other areas, we're not going to sit back. And you keep doing this, we are ready to protect ourselves. And this is an existential crisis for Russia. At what point do you think the bear has been poked enough that we see a major response?
Right. Well, the Russians have basically spoken about this. Putin himself has done. And if you listen to what he has said, if you read what he said carefully, for him, the ultimate red line, the point where if the West crosses, they will respond, will be if cruise missiles or ballistic missiles are launched into Russia. And he specifically discussed missiles like the ATACMS, the Storm Shadow, the French Scalp, the German Taurus missile. His point was that these are weapons that can only be operated by Ukraine with the direct assistance and involvement of Western militaries. Ukraine cannot launch ATACMS missiles unless the programming is done by US technicians. And the same applies to an equal or sometimes even greater extent with all of the other missiles. So he says, if you start launching these missiles at our territory, then what that means is that you are directly attacking our territory. You, Germany, France, Britain, the United States are attacking us. And in that kind of situation, we will be obliged to respond. And he's spoken about responding against military assets in other places. He has reminded the Europeans that the Russians are able to launch cruise missiles at any point in Europe. He reminded the Europeans also that some of their countries have very dense populations, a rather chilling comment, actually, right. Very threatening comment. And he also very pointedly said to the Americans, because one gets the sense that the Europeans on this are even more aggressive than the Americans are. He said to the Americans, look, if we get into this situation where the Europeans are launching missiles at us and we feel we have to respond by launching missiles at them, what are you expecting to do, given that we possess nuclear strategic parity with you? In other words, he was saying that if you don't get this whole situation under control, you could find yourself in an all-out nuclear war with us, with Russia. So I think that is his red line. Now, he's spoken about this very clearly. He said this, by the way, before the announcement that was made last week, green lighting the use of weapons, Western weapons, against Russia by Ukraine. And it was striking that the Americans excluded the ATACMS and, by extension, the Storm Shadows and the Scalps from the types of weapons that could be used in this way. So for the moment, at least, they're showing that they both understand the Russian red lines and are respecting them. But we can't count on that indefinitely, because up to this point, there has been no red line, whether it's been a real Russian one or a one that the West has imposed upon itself, that the Western powers in this conflict have not eventually crossed.
Right, exactly. All of them have been crossed by the Western powers, it seems, up till this point. And how long until Russia says enough is enough with HIMARS attacks into Belgorod region and other areas in the civilian infrastructure? You're using American-provided HIMARS to continue to attack. They don't reach to the level of cruise missiles. But still, this is, of course, exactly the red line for Russia in the Donbass, the continued attack on the Donbass for, you know, since 2014. And so I'll get you out of here on this, Alexander, which is when you see last week, I think in the UK or maybe a week and a half ago in the UK specifically, you know, they were warning, you're in London, warning folks, you know, stock up on food supplies, water, make sure you have supplies. Germany over the past 24 hours telling citizens, you know, prepare your cellars. We don't think you should go to large scale bunker situations. Get ready for your basements to be used. What do you make of those? Is it scare tactics to kind of ready the populace for this, the inevitability, or something else?
It shows divided tactics, because on the one hand, European governments have been going out of their way to reassure their populations that the West can escalate indefinitely in Ukraine without provoking a Russian reaction. So, you know, don't worry, you know, if we launch attacks on Russia, well, you know, the Russians are just bluffing. We shouldn't take this very seriously. Their nuclear warnings aren't real. We can just go on doing this as long as we want and to the, whatever extent that we wish, because there's not really going to be a Russian reaction. So that's the main message that they're giving. But at the same time, they're now giving this absolutely contradictory message, which is that actually the Russians are coming. World War III is on its way. You've all got to prepare. What they're trying to do is that on the one hand, they don't want to panic their populations, which might turn them against the wall. And at the same time, they want their populations committed to the war, even despite the gathering economic crisis in Europe and in Britain as well, by the way. So what they're trying to do is, on the one hand, they're saying, you know, it's don't worry, we can escalate however much we want, but the Russians are a threat. The Russians are coming and we must prepare against it, against them. It's completely contradictory. But in the media space that exists in Europe, which has become extremely controlled now, there is no one, unfortunately, to point out the contradictions.
Well, that's why you guys continue to do a great job at the Duran, and we're thrilled to have you on here. Alexander Mercurius, we always appreciate you joining us and providing some insights. One of the smartest individuals on the case, if you will. Alexander, great to see you. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Clayton, and thank you for your very kind words just now.
All right, so that's the plan. War, is that your summer plan?
Yeah.
Clear the decks if it wasn't. Okay, we have more news to get to. We're going to talk about excess deaths, how they continue to be high throughout the Western world, and how the media has woken up to that fact all of a sudden. Way to catch up. We've been on that one for 2 years. At least, but okay. We also are going to talk about those PCR tests that they put up your nose using them to restrict your freedom. Well, a court in the European Union has now ruled that they were not a reliable way to restrict freedom or count case numbers. And I'm mad as snakes about it. So we're going to talk about that coming up. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Lear Capital, because, of course, you know that experts are predicting a recession. You probably already feel like you're in a recession because inflation continues to rage out of control, continues to go up month after month. And when you see these inflationary numbers, you think, will this ever go down? Will eggs ever be a reasonable cost again? Well, that's why last year was so terrible for most investors, and people are thinking that maybe this year could be even worse. Unless you were smart and invested in gold, then you were protected from losses while other investments fell. So if you are interested in investing in precious metals, specifically gold or silver, you can do so in your IRA, you can do so in a 401k, but it has to be a specific type, and Lear can help you learn how to do that, roll your accounts over, and make better investments for you and your family. So give them a call or go to LearRedacted.com. Although I will say, if you call them, they really understand your family's different financial options and can help you learn and decide and tell you what to study so you feel comfortable. So call them at 800-613-3557. There are a lot of gold companies to choose from, but Lear has over 25 years of experience and thousands of five-star reviews. So again, call them or go to LearRedacted.com. The phone number is 800-613-3557 or again, LearRedacted.com. The media is waking up to the fact that excess deaths are a thing and have been since the pandemic and specifically the vaccine rollout. Way to catch up after years of lacking curiosity on the matter. Now the headline from The Telegraph today, the first corporate media headline of its kind, despite, of course, excess deaths happening since 2020 at least. Well, someone who was warning about this all along is Dr. Kelly Victory. She joins us today and is a first-time guest on Redacted. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks very much for having me.
So, okay, let's go over this study because the media is like, oh, what's this? Excess deaths, despite having no curiosity about it. So why is this a groundbreaking study?
Well, as you pointed out, I and others have been bringing this to light now for almost 3 years. The fact that the mainstream media is just waking up, I guess, is to be expected. The reality is that we've had the data, and the data are irrefutable. We've seen a significant uptick in all-cause mortality in pretty much every civilized country, around the globe. We have data going back to to, or, you know, 2020. And interestingly, the excess deaths did not begin then. This most recent study from Germany showed that they looked at excess deaths beginning, meaning all, if you look at deaths from all causes and say, how many deaths would we normally expect in a year? And they compared the deaths in 2020 to that. And they said, they're really, the deaths from all causes were pretty much on par in 2020, despite the fact that we were in the very serious Delta wave of COVID. There wasn't a significant increase in Aussie in deaths. Somewhere around 4,000 increased deaths in Germany were noted in 2020. That changed drastically in 2021, and specifically after April of 2021. They saw a 2-standard deviation increase in deaths in Germany beginning in April of 2021, and stunningly, a 4-standard deviation increase in deaths in 2022. This is consistent with what life insurance companies in the United States started to report in January of 2022. They saw a 40% increase in deaths in the age group where you wouldn't normally expect them, meaning those people who are employed, people between the ages of 19 and, say, 49. That increase has not been accounted for by any of the organizations that are mandated, whose job it is to look into this, namely the CDC. Why have they not investigated this? If people want to speculate that it's something other than, in my mind, the most obvious thing, what happened in April 21? Let's see. It was the mass rollout of the mRNA vaccines. If someone wants to suggest that there is another reason, great, let's have that discussion. But we are obligated as scientists to look into this and to come up with plausible explanations for why we have seen this massive increase in all-cause mortality.
Now, one thing that the Telegraph does report is, oh, well, it could be the vaccine rollout because the times correlate, the months that you say, but also it could be pandemic-related measures, lockdown measures, and things like that. So they are still leaving it open for other causes. So what do you think of that?
Well, there's no question that we saw an increase in harm and damage to people because of the unnecessary and preposterous mitigation schemes like the lockdown. UNICEF has calculated that somewhere in the range of possibly 250,000, a quarter of a million children may have starved to death globally as a result of the lockdown and the impact on the food supply, the food chain. So, yes. Then there were people who were clearly driven to substance abuse and may have died from that. There were people who died from lack of medical care for underlying conditions like diabetes and heart disease. But that can't possibly explain the totality of a 4-standard deviation increase. Furthermore, why did we not start seeing that increase until after April of 2021? Those mitigation schemes were put in place beginning in March of 2020. So if the issue was the measures like masking, social distancing, lockdowns, whatever else, we would have expected to see the increase in deaths beginning far sooner than April of 2021.
Good point. Good point. So there's a chart here that gives a predicted linear trend of excess deaths, which is usually pretty steady state. The governments and researchers and demographers expect that, you know, deaths will be at about a certain rate. And then we see just all these spikes and peaks and valleys. Mm-hmm. But it does seem like it is starting to drop back off to expected levels. So what does that tell us?
Well, unfortunately, we are still seeing increases in conditions like cancers, and I believe we've only seen the tip of the iceberg on that. But we know that deaths that are related to the vaccine commonly occur relatively quickly after people have gotten the injection, whether it's the initial series of two shots or a booster. That said, conditions like cardiac injuries, myocarditis, pericarditis, neurologic conditions, cancers, those things are going to be delayed. So we'd expect to see some flattening of the curve because of the deaths related to the acute phase negative responses like blood clots and sudden cardiac deaths related to the injections. There is going to be a sort of a lagging indicator, if you will, of those disease processes that take a longer period of time. None of the deaths at this point can be attributed to COVID itself. The virus has done precisely what we would expect it to do. It became more contagious over time and at the same time less lethal. Again, the most serious viral variant was the Delta wave that occurred in 2020. Yet that is not when we are seeing and when countries are reporting the significant increase in deaths.
Right. And the deaths in young people, the study doesn't parse it out by age, but we have seen that from at least the United Kingdom government, the CDC. And it begs the super uncomfortable question is, did we have to have done this? Because it even cites that at a global level, the pre-vaccination infection fatality rate was 0.03 for people under 60, 0.07 for people under 70, and for children under the age of 19, the infection fatality rate was 0.0003. So this is a risk-benefit analysis we were not allowed, but we can have it now, and it's damning, wouldn't you say?
Yes, and this is something I reported on from essentially day one. We knew from the very beginning that children, and I use that term loosely, it's really healthy people under the age of, say, 25 or even 30, were at such a de minimis risk from COVID as to be fundamentally indistinguishable from zero. They were at no serious risk from this. We knew that people who had obesity, diabetes, and heart disease were the people who were at the highest risk. The vast majority of the public was otherwise not at risk at all. And we knew that from the beginning. I and the few others who tried to report on it were egregiously censored, shut down, threatened, ridiculed. I got kicked off of every social media platform from nearly day one. We knew this. Furthermore, we knew that the idea of trying to do a mass vaccination program in the midst of a pandemic violates every fundamental rule of vaccinology, epidemiology, and virology. There's a reason we never initiate a vaccine program during an active pandemic, because it drives viral mutations in ways that you otherwise wouldn't see it happen in nature, and you can end up setting off a far worse outbreak. Furthermore, there's a reason why the average vaccine takes 6 to 8 years to come to market, if it ever makes it to market at all. There are a heck of a lot of viruses for which we've tried to come up with a safe and effective vaccine and haven't been able to do it. Think about things like herpes, norovirus, Coxsackie virus, rhinovirus, lots of viruses out there. This isn't something you can just, womp up in your basement in a matter of months. And the mRNA technology, despite what people have been told or led to believe, is not a safe and well-tested platform. Scientists have been working on it for well more than a decade, but it has failed and failed miserably on every previous attempt to make a vaccine, sometimes where all of the animals died, for example. So this vaccine had every markings of something that was dangerous, it was unnecessary, it was unsafe, and it was ineffective. The three legs of the stool that are required to roll something out: safety, efficacy, and necessity. And it failed on all three of those.
Jeez. I mean, the data is just continuing to prove you right when, you were punished for saying those things. One thing, though, that the authors conclude of this study is that, yes, there are serious concerns about continued excess deaths in Western nations. And so they say, and this is the sort of lull part of it, like, oh, okay, government leaders and policymakers need to thoroughly investigate underlying causes of persistent excess mortality. Well, I don't trust those groups of people to investigate themselves. So who do we turn to?
Well, you're exactly right, and they're doing everything they can to obfuscate. They would like very much to get rid of the small control group that exists, people like me who were never vaccinated for COVID and are not showing these increases in cancers, autoimmune diseases, neurologic conditions, cardiac injury, those sorts of things. They are at the ready to roll out the next pandemic, again, I believe, in an effort to, number one, foist an additional mRNA vaccine on people, and number two, to muddy the waters further about what could possibly be the cause of the excess deaths and the excess injuries. So many of the things that they label as, quote, long COVID, and don't get me wrong, long COVID, what we called previous to COVID, post-viral syndrome, does exist. There are many respiratory viruses, including influenza, that can cause a prolonged syndrome following infection. That said, the vast majority of the cases that are being called long COVID are actually vaccine injury. Because if you look at the number of people who haven't been vaccinated, like myself, had COVID, like myself, there are lots of us out there. Interestingly, there's very low incidence of, quote, long COVID in people who were not vaccinated.
Wow, that's something I had not considered. So, okay. Well, thank you for breaking this down for us. Again, this is something that you've been saying for a while and we're attacked for it. So thank you so much for coming on Redacted for the first time. It was a pleasure to have you. Please come back another time.
Thank you. I'd be delighted to join you again.
So they knew about it. They just were quiet about it. And finally, I'm glad that they're finally awakening to this massive excess deaths. Although they sort of tiptoe around it in their headlines, though. It's like...
Right. Yeah. I mean, but at least there's an allusion to the study that now says, yeah, could have had something to do with vaccines or other pandemic measures. So now we can take 4 years later, we can take a critical look at those things. We couldn't back then. It was considered right-wing conspiracy. But now, okay, you can take that conspiracy and shove it right up your...
Well, here's another conspiracy you can shove right up your nose, which is the PCR test. And in a moment, we're going to talk about a court in Portugal has just ruled that PCR tests were unfit for purpose, meaning total garbage, essentially, not reliable for legal means to restrict someone's life. You know, all of the lockdowns.
Yet that's travel. Exactly what happened.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about that in a second. Also, Tucker Carlson had a chance to meet Klaus Schwab. How did that go? And what does the future of the World Economic Forum look like? We'll talk about that. But first...
First, we want to tell you about a new show sponsor, Pure Health Research. Now, this is a company that you want to look into because they specialize in creating natural supplements to help people just like you in their everyday lives. And they've helped more than 2 million Americans, especially with their best-selling product, the Liver Health Formula. Well, why is that so popular? Well, the American Liver Foundation reports that 100 million Americans suffer from an overworked and sluggish liver. So it's no surprise because, of course, your liver is getting bombed every day with things that you can't even control. Microplastics, toxins, fluoride. For that, I referred you to our Derek Bros interview on fluoride, GMOs, all the stuff that we try to avoid, but it's in our world, right? So that's why it makes so many of us so sluggish and overworked liver. So for decades, your liver has helped you with 500 key functions daily. Maybe it's time you help it back by giving it this supplement. So look into this for yourself at getliverhelp.com/redacted. And we have an exclusive deal for our listeners. You can get the Try Liver Health Formula and receive 1 month's supply of nano-powered omega-3 to support heart health. So again, you can see if you want that bonus gift, go ahead and go to this website right now. It's getliverhelp.com/redacted. A court in Portugal ruled that PCR COVID tests were unfit for purpose, meaning they were not a reliable or a legal means for restricting people's movement and freedoms. And yet Portugal did exactly that for over 2 years, and so did Europe. So Portuguese lawyer and political analyst Alexandre Guerrero joins us to discuss this. So thank you so much. You and I were here in Portugal during the pandemic. We know that these were used as rule of law. Can you explain how this is now broken up by this case?
Yes. So once again, it's a pleasure to join you here and to speak about all these issues. So the case was basically very simple. It was four tourists that were in Azores Islands, and they were forced to stay in quarantine and confined because one of them had or was diagnosed with COVID-19. It was several years ago. It was not in the beginning, but it was more or less 4 years ago. What happened next, it was that they filed a claim claiming that they needed to be released because they were being forced to stay in the hotel for an undetermined period because local authorities were forcing them to stay there due to one PCR test. What happened next was that the court recognized that there was no scientific reason to keep them confined and arrested, because this is how they felt, arrested at home without coming to the streets or making their daily life in a normal way. And then there was an appeal, and what the appeals chamber decided was pretty curious, because they quoted several studies demonstrating that the PCR tests could in 97% of the times come up with fake positive results. And thanks to this, many people were forced to stay at home. Otherwise, they were committing crimes during COVID time, during the pandemic. So this is wild, because this is not an isolated case. We had hundreds, not to say thousands, of people in Portugal and everywhere, millions of people everywhere, that were forced to stay at home just due to the PCR tests that declared that they had COVID. And now the question is, why were all those people forced to stay at home and to respond for committing crimes, when actually there's not enough scientific evidence that can demonstrate that these PCR tests were enough to demonstrate that they were able to pass and to transmit the virus to other people close to them?
Now, this is outrageous, and the judges further ruled that only a doctor can diagnose somebody with something like this, which stands to reason, but it feels to me that the entire culture in Portugal just laid down and said, this is the way it is, we're gonna do this, we're gonna follow the rules. And it's interesting that it was a German tourist who said, no, these are my freedoms, I'm going to contest this. Because as you said, when we spoke about this earlier, this is a forbidden topic. People in Portugal don't like it, and they don't like the mirror that it held up against society that we didn't really push back here.
That's true. People here don't like and don't appreciate much when their convictions, their beliefs are challenged, because they have a strong belief that things are like they were told that they were. And then suddenly comes the lack of scientific evidence, or in contrary, scientific evidence demonstrating exactly the opposite. For example, the most recent results that have came out to the public concerning the efficiency of the vaccines, All of those, for example, they are kept in silence because they don't want people to know that many of those vaccines that were then administered to people, actually they have less efficient results than they were announced that they would have, as well as secondary effects that back then it was promised to people that there were no side effects, there was nothing going to happen to the person that took the vaccines. And then suddenly now we have more and more cases and more studies, because only in the long term you can make this kind of studies, demonstrating that actually those vaccines might be more dangerous than they were when they were announced by the government. But you know what? There was something back then that should have called the attention of everyone, not only in Portugal, but worldwide. It was that the companies responsible for developing these vaccines, they denied any kind of responsibility for side effects and they passed this responsibility for the governments. So they were not sure of what they were doing, or to some extent they were, but they just did not want to be held liable for that. And this should be worrying, because here in Portugal, from time to time, this kind of topic comes in one or another news outlet, but no one dares to debate or to analyze this, because yes, it was a strong conviction and a belief. So no one wants to challenge that.
Right. Now, I wonder what kind of recourse this has, not only for people who were in Portugal at the time, but also the European Union, because now this is a court precedent saying that these PCR tests were not a legal or reliable way to restrict freedom. But that's exactly what happened. And I think to myself, this is just one. I have three children, and they were diagnosed with COVID in domino order. Every 2 weeks, one of them was. So we continued to test in order for them to go back to school. And then 2 weeks later, the second child, and 2 weeks later, the third child. And I was testing negative, which meant they kept me in quarantine for 6 weeks, because every 2 weeks I had a new child and was considered at risk based on these totally bunk tests. And I feel furious about that. The trips that you can't take, the hundreds of euros that I spent on PCR tests to fulfill these requirements. So not only the disruption to our lives, but the sheer cost of testing everybody above 12, every grandmother, every aunt, all of that stuff. Is there any recourse for us, either residents or in Portugal or Europe?
If you can demonstrate the damages that were caused to you, and for example, I'm thinking about all of those who were connected to some kind of activity that demanded that they were independent workers. So they rely only on their own income and on their own job of their activities, which means that if they are unfit to work, they can't get any kind of income, and they can lose clients, they can lose whatever that they want that was coming from their activity. So if you can demonstrate the damages resulting from this kind of PCR tests and from these decisions in such cases, you can actually put the state of Portugal in court and demand that they become liable for all the damages caused, especially because what's at stake here, it's not only that, but like you said, to be forbidden to travel, to do just to come to the street, your mental health was in jeopardy back then. And what you can do in such cases, it was that you had your fundamental rights being violated. And there are a lot of fundamental rights, even the fundamental right to have access, the family gathering. That's a fundamental right. The fundamental right to work, the fundamental right to pursue an economic activity, everything. So if you can demonstrate how much you have lost, for example, not only the way it affected you in person and mental on a mentally basis, for example, if you needed back then and until now to go to a shrink, for example, to take some medicines because of the state of anxiety where you have fallen, and also to demonstrate all the losses of income that you had, then it's highly likely that you can put the Portuguese state to become liable for all of that. Because back then there were no studies, there were only convictions, ideologies, and yet they did not hesitate, not only in Portugal, but worldwide, they did not hesitate to put everybody at home, staying at home, and based on PCR tests that in 97% of the times, they bring fake positive results, which now, is a very high rate.
Yes, but on the news, we saw case numbers going up and up and up based on these tests. So what does that say about the case numbers? And then you recall that there were two periods at least when the government told us, oh, case numbers are high, so we have new quarantine rules. And the rules were these stupid rules where we had to be home by 1 p.m. on the weekends. That, I mean, exactly. As if that was the stupidest thing. And we did it because we had to, or else you would get arrested, using these case numbers, which we now know were based on unreliable tests. So what do we conclude then about case numbers?
No, that actually we were fooled all the time. They just threw up to the public a lot of numbers just to keep the people frightened. just like that. Because I remember in the beginning, in the first months, each time I was watching the news and everybody were watching the news, and there were the numbers of deaths coming from Italy, from Spain. Come on, 600 people died in one day, 1,000 people died in one day. This was the beginning to make everyone feel scared. And after that, they came with all of these numbers on a daily basis. They were presenting and showing the numbers, saying that everyone was in danger. They even suggested at first that we couldn't even touch specific objects where other people used to touch. So this was supposed to make people freak out and to be so afraid of this threat that we would be able to accept everything that was adopted. And this was just the beginning because, as you know, in the early days of this month, on June 1st, there was a huge demonstration in Switzerland against the World Health Organization. And also because the World Health Organization, although they do not have powers to bind the states to any kind of decision coming from the WHO, however, they did not hesitate to try to push decisions and recommendations to force the countries to abide and to feel that they have to follow everything that WHO recommends to every country. And I also remember something that were some presidents of some countries, for example, in Brazil, President Bolsonaro, who was accused of committing genocide, and he was accused by some activist groups of committing crimes against humanity because he did not decide to put people in quarantine. The same was about to be prepared by President Trump at the same time, as you remember. So what about all these damages? Because this was also used for political purposes by the opposition.
Right, that's a good point. That's a good point. So then I guess what I'm wondering is how this works, because Portuguese Now law has this precedent-setting case that people were harmed based on falsified tests or unreliable tests. So can this now apply to other EU nations?
I hope that this at least inspire EU nations, but I haven't seen much about this kind of decision from the Portuguese court. I don't think they are pretty interested on inspire other countries with this kind of decision. Because what's interesting here, Natalie, is that the appeals chamber, they did not just decide that the PCR tests were not able to define if a person was infected or not. They quoted scientific studies. And it was not an opinion article written in a newspaper. It
right.
was scientific articles yeah. and studies. And the more scientific studies we have, and the more scientific studies we take a look, at least to evaluate them, the more we feel that we were fooled by the government.
Yes, and tortured as well, because Portuguese testers, swab testers, had a reputation for being the most aggressive. They were brutal. They went way into your nose as opposed to anywhere else I took it. It felt like it was purposeful torture, so...
Possibly, because in such conditions, we were able and we were willing to accept anything that they decided to impose on people. So this is part of the so-called psyops, and here they work perfectly. But now what frightens me the most is to see that decisions like this from the appeals chamber, actually, people don't care. People don't, they read it, but okay, this time is gone, so I just don't care. This worries me. Here in Portugal, people don't have the same impulse and spirit like we have in other countries.
Right. Well, I am muito zangada. That means I'm super mad about it. So I am so glad to talk to you about that. Thank you so much. You can follow Alexandre Guerreiro on YouTube. It's Alexandre Guerreiro PT. Also on X as well. I think it's A Guerreiro, right? On
A Guerreiro.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you again for coming on Redacted. Always a pleasure.
It's a pleasure, Natalie.
Does that bring back flashbacks? All the ways we had to order our lives around these PCR tests, all those drive-throughs, all the money.
You know what?
It's ridiculous.
It really pisses me off because I've been saying this for the longest time, but like if you think about it, that means there's absolutely no accurate data on COVID that we can go that we can use to know exactly how many people actually had it, actually died from it. Like not like yeah. if that That's if that information point. Is wrong, it's all wrong.
I'm so right. mad.
Right. I mean,
I'm madder than mad.
Well, you think about all the people that died with COVID in a hospital, right? Died with it. Mm-hmm. Oh, they died because they were in a car accident and they also happened to have a runny nose.
Yeah.
So they
yeah,
were dying because
like
they're
30 days after or something.
Right.
Like,
right.
If they died anywhere near them being tested positive with a like a test that is not, it doesn't work.
Right.
It tested positive. Then they died with COVID.
Well, here's another crazy story is that we had COVID in our house and we were sick. Clayton and I were sick together. One of us took a home test and it was positive, and the other one took a home test and it was negative. Now, in Europe, if you had a government test, a test that was recognized and it was a positive test, then that was as good as a vaccine certificate. So Clayton had a positive test, so they never required a vaccine certificate. So that QR code was like gold. So then when I wanted to go get that, because we were both sick, we had the same thing, I kept going back for tests because I want that positive test QR code that substitutes for a vaccine card so that no one asked for a vaccine card. I kept going back and back and back. And I was like,
she's like, I'm going, I'm
gonna
get
have it. I'm sick too.
And then it finally showed
He's
up.
He's positive. I went 3 times to this drive at my own cost of 50 euro until I could get that because I wanted that positive test code that substituted for a vaccine. So like, see how awful, like things like that we were going through all the time.
Yeah.
Elon Musk even tested it. He went to the same day, same doctor, same test, 2 different nostrils, 1 negative, 1 positive.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the tyranny of this. And then right. they charge mm-hmm. you that amount of money. And then in the U.S., remember President Biden was like, we're going to give them to you yeah. for free. We're going to ship them to your house for free. If you want them, you go to this website. And that's the you know, and oh, my God.
And I subjected my 12-year-old to it as well, because that was the cutoff age for the vaccine. And I was worried that they were going to start to require him to have a vaccine, which I didn't want to give him. So as soon as he got sick, I took him every day for a week to get yeah. a positive test so that no one would bother him. Like this, based on nothing.
Yeah.
Based on nothing.
Right.
So that I'm and giving him a like, big middle finger on that one.
And you also take like the incentives of Mary Bowden. She's a doctor that did not fall in. So like she was on the Peter McCullough side of things with the ivermectin and stuff like that. And she said that if she would have gotten her 6,000 patients vaccinated, she would have made $1.5 million from the government because they were incentivized to get whatever the higher percentage you could get people vaccinated, tested, and all that with COVID, the more money they made.
Yeah. So anyhow.
Never again. All right. We got more news to get to here on the show. We're going to talk about Tucker Carlson and Klaus Schwab in a moment and what his thoughts were upon meeting Klaus Schwab and the future of the sort of deep state, the World Economic Forum controlling all of our lives. Maybe a positive spin on that. We'll talk about that in a moment.
But first, we want to tell you about American financing, because you know food cost is up, insurance cost is up, childcare, gas. You probably are struggling like everybody else to make ends meet. And some of us just kind of look to, how are we going to pay for the things we need? Maybe some of us putting things on credit cards. So if you're a homeowner, then you should look into American financing, because they can help you pay off your debt and break free from financial stress. What they do is look at what are the liabilities, the things that you owe, and do you have any assets that can offset those terrible high interest liabilities? This is what wealthy people do, is they think, what are my bad financial products? Can I swap them out with better? So what they'll look at is, do you have anything that you can trade? They are a salary-based mortgage consultant that you can then lower your monthly payments and save more money. They save homeowners an average of $854 a month. So take the time to learn about this, to see if it can work for you. You could close in as fast as 10 days. You can call them at 866-890-8434, or you can go to AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. Again, just set aside some time and say, I'm going to look into this for me. If it can make it easier for myself and my family, I'm ready to learn something new. It's AmericanFinancing.net/redacted.
All right. Well, Tucker Carlson, it turns out Tucker Carlson had a chance to meet World Economic Forum's Klaus Schwab. Can you imagine what that must have been like? So Klaus Schwab, the main driver behind the Great Reset, of course. Just a few weeks ago, of course, we found out that Schwab is stepping down and is handing over the reins to his family. And his daughter, Nicole. Now, we did report on this show, of course, that they didn't want to hand over the reins of the World Economic Forum to outsiders. They want to keep it within the Schwab family. And this is going to continue on. So no board members. It's going to be contained inside the Schwab family. And she wants to continue the Great Reset. She's publicly said this a number of months ago. So is he really the brain trust that we think he is? Well, Tucker Carlson was just on the Sean Ryan show, and he admitted to meeting the guy, and he wasn't impressed at all by him. Watch.
I was with Klaus Schwab this winter. I was just trying to casually drop that, Sean. I was with Klaus Schwab. Klaus Schwab said to me, "No, I spoke at an event in the Middle East. He was at in whatever. I don't know Klaus Schwab, but I got to see him up close, you know. And he's like an idiot. He's like an elderly idiot. He seems a little senile. Like doesn't have any idea what he's talking about at all. He's totally unimpressive. And it was just another reminder that the closer you get, like a Toria Nuland, for example, basically started the current war in Ukraine. She's like this kind of sad, fat, dumb girl, you know, actually. And okay. So the closer you get, the more you realize that the people running things are like mediocre. They're buffoons. They have no idea what they're doing. Tony Blinken? I mean, really?
So... Okay. So totally unimpressive.
I wonder how he really feels.
Sad, fat, dumb girl. But it does.
But powerful, right?
But powerful.
People die because of her dumb mistakes.
Well,
self-loathing dumb mistakes.
The reason I think that this is interesting is not just it's the assessment of this sort of insular world where you have in Washington D.C. or you have these sort of power brokers, the Ursula von der Leyen's, the Klaus Schwab's, the you know Tedrosses of the world, like they're sad individuals.
Well, you know
they're sad, unimpressive individuals.
Never meet your heroes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you know. Tucker was really thought of him as a hero, and he's like, "Wow, you really disappointed me. You're quite a loser, actually."
Joe Rogan had this bit that he did in his stand-up where he was like, you know, you don't want an intelligent president. Like they had an intelligent president, and then like people were like the powers that be would be like, I think we can go dumber. So they went with Bush. They're like, I think we can go even dumber. And it's like they want those people that are idiots in there because they don't resist what they tell them to do.
Right. Yeah. Exactly right.
Yeah, that's why they say, you know, you can. It's very difficult to ever have someone who is, you know, very, very high IQ in any of these positions. Because they are controlled. But, you know, Klaus Schwab, I think, does control things. And if he's an unimpressive idiot who's sort of he's got sycophants all around him, right? And I think that's the thing. He never really is allowed out of his bubble to meet people like Tucker Carlson and these other individuals who are going to do challenging things. When he does the World Economic Forum, it's all sycophants who are surrounding him and asking him questions, right? But he's an elderly idiot who seems a little senile, doesn't have any idea what he's talking about. The closer you get, the more you realize the people running things are mediocre, like buffoons, he says. So, but this is, to me, this was the eye-opening part of this interview, because he's admitted that these guys are idiots who love to destroy the things that they don't build, right? They like to tear down the things that they don't build. So if you think about what Klaus Schwab is doing with the Great Reset, it's tear down going to an office space, right? Going to an office.
Well, the economy as we have built it with our purchasing power, basically.
Yeah, the monetary system as we know it.
So it's like we're the doozers and they're the fraggles. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and that's what Tucker says here. Things that our ancestors have built, the beautiful infrastructure, the financial system, right? Whatever it is, they want to tear it down. He describes it all as vandalism. Watch.
Oh, I don't think there's like a conspiracy. I doubt they're smart enough to like articulate it and write it down or anything like that. But it's just like, again, they're weak people. They're motivated by rage and envy. They're not the people who built the current society that we live in. Anything worth having, they did not build, from our beautiful train stations to our power grid to any of our infrastructure, to Harvard University, to our legal code, to anything that's great about America. They didn't you know, protect the national parks. They had nothing to do with Yellowstone. Like they didn't create anything. They're not capable of it. And they're mad about it. And they're mad in the way that primitive, envious people are mad. You know, they don't celebrate beauty, they destroy beauty. You see this a lot. It's one of the main motivators of evil, in my view. And they just want to tear it down. They just want to tear it down. They're mad about it. Like, they couldn't have done that. Dead white men. Okay. Who created our entire society. Like, everything. All our founding documents. Everything. And they hate them most. Why do they hate them, actually? Why would you be mad? Why are you mad at James Madison? Like, he's long gone. Thomas Jefferson owned slaves. Okay. Unlike Muhammad. You know, or whatever. You know, they come up with these pretexts to justify their hate. But really, it's just envy. Because they're not capable people. They have no skills. Like Tony Blinken?
Yeah.
Like Tony Blinken couldn't change a tire on your truck. Like, he's a fucking idiot. Like, actually. It's not a surprise that he's mismanaged the world. He's out there like playing guitar in Kiev, which he calls Kyiv, because he's just like a child. They all are. And they're mad about the fact that they're fraudulent and weak and helpless, actually. Supply chain breaks down. They all starve to death. Like, they know that. And they're mad about it. And so they want to wreck the things that others built. This is like the oldest story there is.
You think that's what it is?
Of course. It's why the Vandals sacked Rome. Of course. You built this great. It's why people spray graffiti on beautiful buildings in New York City. You didn't build this. Neither did your ancestors. You're a fucking moron. You couldn't build anything. So you tear it down. Of course. It's the oldest impulse there is. Vandalism. It's all vandalism.
What do you guys think of that? I think the evil part was interesting. Like, that's a precursor to evil. It's like the root of all evil. Mm-hmm. And it's the most telling part of evil. And you want to tear everything down. I think, I don't know, I found it really fascinating.
It sounds like Commodus, right? The most destructive emperor of the Roman Empire, and the only one that was a direct descendant of an emperor. So he didn't earn that position. He was birthed into it and destroyed it. So if you study your Roman history, you would know that Commodus was the end of the Roman Empire. And if you haven't studied, maybe you've seen Gladiator, because that is exactly the archetype of the way that Joaquin Phoenix played it.
Right. And by the way, the Roman Empire, you devalue the currency.
Yeah.
You borrow more than you have coming in, and then the Vandals are at the gate. Right. This is what happens.
You just look at this administration and what's like, if you just look at what's happening in the United States, it's crumbling. Like, we are watching it crumble with the immigration and with the economy and everything. We're seeing before our eyes this country crumble. And it's like, they know they can do stuff about it, but they don't. They fake pass legislation. They fake fight that they're, you know, the Republicans didn't pass the immigration bill. Like, it's just like, but if you looked at the actual bill, it would destroy the country.
Yes, but when he says, I don't think that it's intentional. It's just these big whiny babies who are otherwise incompetent, and that's what we are suffering from their leadership. It's hard to know, right? And I don't want to have this sort of religious zealot idea about it, is that every bad decision is part of a global conspiracy and they're all connected, because it's really hard to know why so many people in power are doing so many destructive things.
Well, it also gives them so much, a huge level of intelligence.
Right.
Right. You mean to tell me that all of these clowns are so smart that it's like five-dimensional chess somehow, that they're that far ahead of us.
Yes.
But the thing is, you know, they did write these things down. Right. They did write these things down in their Great Reset plans in 2030 and all of these things. So they've mapped out these meetings.
Right.
They've mapped out these plans when they get together and they have meetings about these things.
Yeah.
When the Fed gets together and plans these things, and then it comes to fruition just a few short years later. And when you look at COVID, for crying out loud, right? I mean, we were hearing about COVID as part of a plan, or as part of a pandemic, before it happened. It's not to me, that's not a coincidence.
Right. Yeah, it's just, well, I think that, if we always defer to the global conspiracy, that almost will make us lazy and we could miss things. And I was raised in a religious sect where there was always an answer to evil in the world. It was this, that, or the other. It's the devil, it's this, right? And so that's the only thing that I get nervous about, is anytime I see something, I'm like, that's the conspiracy, because then that makes me not look further. That's the only thing I worry about.
Well, and I think it's kind of like Game of Thrones, you know, where you have there's like a small group of people that are in there with the table that has the world on it. And they're like planning, okay, this is what we have to do here. And this, and then it's like, then the powers that they have around them go out and disperse that to the power that they go talk to. So it's like, there's a small sect of people that are controlling everything. In my opinion, this is just what I think, because like, there's no way they could strategically, it's like a general strategically taking out a military. You have to have a strategy that knows exactly, like if you lay like a some kind of like blueprint over the top of it, you can see that it, like with every little thing, it all kind of like comes together as one big thing, because it's doing the same thing. It's all destroying the same thing. So well, we know in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we know that these people in power are doing this. Again, the World Economic Forum in these meetings, all of these things have come to pass. We've been tracking them. And when we call them out is the only time that seems to stop them. Right. When we call out what the World Economic Forum is doing, or we call the World Health Organization out about their pandemic treaty. And right. Then countries are like aware of it and stand up and say, no, we're not doing this. And they vote against it. It's because we and others shine a light on it.
Yeah.
In addition to which, you have the Bilderberg meetings. You have all of these sort of secret meetings where right. They are deciding what's going to happen on a larger scale. These billionaires get together and drive consensus.
I mean, yeah. It goes all the way back to 1913 to Jekyll Island, where that group of bankers got together, and we are still dealing with the financial system that they set up on that island in secret with the Federal Reserve and all of that. We're still dealing with that today. From 1913, and so they set that a lot of these paths in place way back then, and now it's just all coming to fruition.
Well, right. You just go to the Bretton Woods Agreement in the United States during the Bretton Woods Accords. I mean, the financial system that we currently have as the reserve currency of the world, the United States dollar, is protected by the Bretton Woods Agreement, which would say that U.S. superiority in naval power and military might will protect the U.S. dollar. You guys use the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency of the world. And our job as part of the Bretton Woods Agreement is to secure and safe passage of trade. But then when that starts, we're still dealing with that today. So we will bully the world with force. We will bully the world with guns. And you have to use the U.S. reserve U.S. dollar as the reserve currency. We will secure the world. That's why we have 900 military bases around the world. So, yeah, that was a meeting. I wasn't invited to that meeting.
Or given a vote.
Nope. Yeah, no, yeah. We weren't given a vote. And it was not voted on by the American people also, by the way.
Right.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I love the fact that the Constitution is here to keep our politicians in place or whatever. But, like, that's a document from the 1700s. I mean, I feel like we're at a point in history where we should be rewriting those things. We should be upgrading this system to a more modern system, because it's so archaic. It only favors the elite. It doesn't favor the people. And I can't believe that more people don't just like rise up and be like, we're done with this. We're not taking it anymore. Like that. I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. Yeah. And do something about it. But like, where would you even start? You know, there's so many things.
Yeah. Although I feel like the Constitution is the only thing protecting us right now, to be honest.
I really feel that way, too.
That's why we have amendments.
I'm really uncomfortable with the idea of ripping that out from under us.
No, you know
what? I don't mean ripping it out, but like what I'm saying is like they have systematically destroyed every bit. Like, look at how many, we can't even say what we want on these platforms. Like, we're losing free speech. We're losing all of these things. And it's like, I'm not saying destroyed. I'm saying like what was it, Iceland, that when they went through the housing bubble like we did, they put the bankers in jail and they wrote a new constitution.
Right.
That the people did. And so that's what I'm saying. Like, it's like,
doesn't
it should
be
updated
to think of the perverts that are in office right now rewriting the constitution when they
but it wouldn't be them. It would be us.
Yes. No, it wouldn't right now.
That's
so.
That's the thing.
Well, right now, but that's what I'm saying. They've got too much power.
It'd be Lindsey Graham.
Yeah.
You know? Oh God.
It'd be Lindsey Graham.
If anybody
Elizabeth
does this,
Warren.
Kill him. If anybody does this, kill him.
Right. Yeah. Jail.
I mean, I think the Constitution is the one thing that we have. I think the amendments process is certainly there for that reason. But I think at the end of the day, you know, we have a country right now and a judicial system that seems to be avoiding the Constitution.
Exactly right.
And if we could get back to the heart of it. So many countries use our constitution as a template to write their own constitutions. And then they throw in some additional things that take away, freedom of the press, for instance, like in Israel and other places, right? They use our constitution as like a baseline, and then they put other stuff on top of it, which removes certain freedoms. So to me, the United States Constitution is like the only document And yeah, that's why we have an amendment process. But I think right
and
now,
and yet,
it's
if
being...
you carry a constitution with you in your pocket and you get pulled over by the police, that is a sign of somebody that they're like third party bumper stickers and stuff.
Right?
Yeah, you're extremist if you carry the constitution. It's like these cops they swear an oath to it, but they're not upholding it. Like nobody in our government is upholding the constitution. They're just trying to circumvent it any chance they get.
Yeah, you're a MAGA extremist. Well. Mm-hmm. Thank you guys so much for joining us tonight here on the show. We really appreciate it. Let us know your thoughts on this in the comments below. Hey, we have a store. We should tell you about our community store. Go to redactedstore.com if you want to pick up some hats and shirts and t-shirts. Here's our Redacted Demand Government Transparency t-shirts. You can pick those up, a Redacted Rebel flag. I saw Mary today. Mary bought a new hat and a new mug. Thank you, Mary. You can go to redactedstore.com. You can get our No Farmers, No Food t-shirts, and we have some other new designs coming as well. I will not comply. Redactedstore.com is the place to go to support independent journalism, and we really thank you for your support.
All right, we'll see you back here tomorrow, everybody. Thank you so much for joining.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.